Making the world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. All right.
This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show.
Yeah.
Thank you. I know it's a lot of you out there want to actually do that. It's a great, great day in the city of Chicago. And folks, I hope it's great wherever you find yourself in the world. It is a beautiful day weather-wise. Nature is just so wonderful sometimes. And it can be a real pain in the ass on other days. But today it is very, 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 very nice, very beautiful, warm and nice. You see the people going about here and there and there and here. I have a window in front of me, so I'm looking out on the Broadway. On the streets, on the avenue, or whatever you want to call it, as I broadcast, which is great. I know a lot of people, a lot of other talk show hosts and sometimes television personalities, if they're doing any kind of a talk show or any kind of show, they're sitting there next to the window and they can look out onto the avenue and see real Americans walking and shopping, doing this, doing that, out with their families. And that's what it's like here with me in my studio. I don't think I can do the show if I wasn't directly in contact with the people. And that's what it's all about. This show is all about the people. It's not about nothing else. I mean, this is not a sports show. It's not a news show. It's a talk show. And it's not a show actually where I actually interview people. Yeah, I don't actually, like I've said before on the show, when I have guests on the show, I don't really call it an interview. They may call it an interview, but I call it a chat, a conversation. I think that's what it is. Because I think if listeners are listening to a conversation more so than an interview, I think you probably have that listener for life because, you know, that listener, you're being real, you're being authentic. You know, there's no fakiness about it when you're having a conversation instead of interviewing somebody, no matter what product they're trying to get across. It just feels real when I do a talk show and I, you know, conversing with the guest and, you know, and we're talking. Basically, it's just a talk, a conversation, not an interview. But if you want to call it an interview, if you want to say, well, George Wilder is going to be interviewing Janet Moore today on its radio show. If you want to say it's an interview, it's your prerogative, if that's what you want to say. But myself being the host and the producer of this show, you know, I know what I want to call it, but you know, it's fun and it's fun. The show is fun, that's why I do it. I wouldn't do this show if it wasn't fun. And I try to parlay that same kind of fun in my talks or conversations or interviews, if you want to say, into that when I'm having guests on the show. And we also do commentary here, you know, whatever's in the news. And I give my own opinions about whatever. And I also talk about, you know, making the world a better place and also making yourself a better place, a better person. Sorry. And we flip of the lip sometimes. Some things is not so easy for me to say, as you probably have learned. I do sometimes I get nervous actually doing my own show. And I know sometimes when the guests come on the show and they're nervous too, and I try to do my best to, you know, calm them down. But sometimes I get nervous, but not all the time, you know. So, but once in a blue moon, I'll get nervous, but you'll never tell that I'm nervous. You'll never see my legs or knees clanging together, you know, when I'm, you know, on the show, whether there's a guest or not. If I'm on the show, if I'm doing this show, sometimes I am nervous. I am nervous. Oh, damn, what am I going to say now? Oh, my God, I better play a clip. Oh, you know, it happens to the best of us, but we kind of get through it. And I had a guest on the show one day, and she said, George, being nervous is kind of saying, she said something, being nervous is not a bad thing. And I agree, it is not a bad thing. I mean, if you're nervous, it means you've really got something to say. Maybe sometimes when you're nervous, whether you're on a radio show or you're talking in front of a crowd of people and you're nervous, and I've done it and I've been nervous, but you know, it feels great when you get through the talk and everybody's saying, that was good, that was great, and people are applauding and everything, and you say, God damn, man, I got through it. Whoa, wow, and they liked it. Good God almighty. Wow, that's great. I was nervous. And sometimes it is a good thing to be nervous. And sometimes it isn't. But you have to pick your time to be nervous, if anybody can ever do that. And I don't think anybody can pick a time to be nervous. It just happens. But it happens, and sometimes it comes along without even you expecting to be nervous. You can go on the stage and say, hey, wow, and feel confident, and you're all confident, and you got your stuff together, you got your notes, you know what you're going to say. All of a sudden, you look out there at that big old crowd, and you go, oh. I mean, I remember the first or second time when I actually was talking in front of a group of people. I mean, all eyes, they were sitting, I was standing, and all eyes were on me. And I'm going, you better be good. You better be good. And I was literally, my legs were literally shaking. I mean, I could have crumbled right there, but I didn't. I made it through whatever I had to say. And once I was done, the crowd applauded. And I was so glad to sit down. I was so glad. Oh, let me take my seat. Okay, all right. You know, and then I was asked to speak again and again and again and again. Even sometimes after that, I was kind of nervous. But, you know, you get over public speaking. I mean, they say one of the most terrified things in the world today is for anybody over just about anything else is public speaking. And you know what? I can relate to that. And I'm pretty sure a lot of you can. But there's nothing better than standing in front of people or being on a radio show or a television show, and you're motivating people that out in the world that, you know, that are listening to you, you know. And that's great. You're giving some encouragement, you're giving telling people things that they can do to better their lives. I'm not the only person that's doing this, so there's a lot of but I have my own way and my own style of doing it. There's a lot of podcasts and radio shows out here that's dedicated to making the world a better place, and there's a lot of radio shows and talk show shows, did I say hoes, talk shows that do not cater to people. They cater to the other side, the demon side, you know. So, you know, people choose what they want to listen to. And your job as a radio show host or a television talk show host is to try to hold their attention and to get them to like you, and so they will tune back in periodically, if not all the time, you know. And I've said this yesterday on the show. One of the things I like about this is that people can listen to the show anytime they want to. I mean, you don't have to always listen live. That would be preferable, but you don't always have to do that. You can listen to it anytime you want to. It's all right here at Block Talk Radio Show.com, Brother Junior. It's right here. You could, and I have around 306, 37, 39, maybe. Who knows? But there's a lot of them there. And they're all good. In my, am I saying that because I'm doing them? No, not really. There's no greater critic of the George Wilder Jr. Show than I am. I cannot put something out here that I do not like, because I know if I don't like it, you're not going to like it. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. It is 6:12 p.m. in the city of Chicago. Great day. It's beautiful. It's warm. It feels like summer. And they're saying that they said yesterday on the weather in the city of Chicago that it was going to be raining and storming out today. Yeah. And we were all anticipating it. But you know what? It didn't happen. These jackasses are always wrong. I mean, you listen to them to get the weather and so you'll know how to dress and proceed on your way when you're walking out the door. And suddenly what they tell you is going to happen does not. And you participating this thing to happen. And a lot of this, when Chicago, I can't speak for other states, but when Chicago gets the weather wrong, these guys don't know how to apologize. Well, we got it wrong. They say things like, well, we missed it. Well, we dodged a bullet there. It didn't show up. That's bull. We did not miss it. We did not dodge a bullet. They were wrong. And I'm hearing that the National Weather Service within America itself, they can't get this stuff right. You know, but there's a lot of people who work out in the weather. I mean, they listen to the weather in order for them to be able to do their jobs, because they don't want to be out here if there's going to be 20 inches of snow. So they, you know, they don't work that day. And that day that they don't work because they think it's going to be, because they were told it's going to be 20 inches of snow, and they find out no snow came on that day, and they have lost the day's pay because they listened to the weathercast and they were wrong. Oh, we missed it. We dodged a bullet. I'm only the messenger. This is crap. I don't know why they pay those guys. I really don't know. Guys and girls, if I should say that. I don't know why they get paid. They're wrong all the time. they were wrong today, because we in Chicago, we expected it to be like, wow. We thought it was gonna be rained out. Cloudy, thunder, lightning. That's what they were saying the other day. And it didn't happen. And lucky for us, it didn't happen, because we had to go out today on some official business. We had to go. And I'm thinking, maybe I should take my umbrella. Then I decided not to. And that was a good decision, because it did not rain. It did not storm. It did not lighten or thunder as it's supposed to have been reported by some of these meteorologists that you listen to. And they always say, download our app, download our app, download our weather app. Why would I want to tie up space on my phone for something that's not reliable? All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, and I've just been ranting about the weather, folks. But it's beautiful. It's wonderful. It's great. It's nice. Makes you want to be outside. But hey, I'm near the window in my studio where we are. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. And I'm talking to you, and you will be talking to me. 347-857-1762. I should have that number embedded in my brain, but I still have to look up and see it and say it, you know, because it's right there in front of me. I probably could sprout an elf, but we would rather make sure I get it right. 347-857-1762, the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. My guest today is author Janet Moore. Janet Moore, let's see, what will she be talking about if she decides to drop by? Oh, Unstoppable Creating Success. That's always a good one, because I think we all want to be successful. And that's what we want to be. There's politics in the world. There's Donald Trump, and there's Barack Obama. There's the Republicans in the White House. But one of the things I can talk about that, and but one of the things more important is talking about you and being successful. Everybody wants to be successful. I think everybody has dreams. I mean, if you don't have a dream, I tell my son all the time, you have to have a dream. You have to be ambitious. You have to get up and go. You have to be wanting to make a difference. You have to be wanting to do that. If you don't want to do any of those things, then they're not going to come to fruition. You have to want to be the best that you can be. You can't sit around and lay around the house and watch other people get places and you don't get anywhere. You have to do something with your life. You know, I mean, there's a lot of people out here who are doing great things with their lives, but then there's some people out here who are not. And some people, as I was telling Joanna yesterday, some people need a kick in the butt to get them to do what they should be doing to better their lives and the lives of those around them. Some people out here are looking for leadership. They're looking for it. You know, they're looking for someone to tell them where to go, where to sit, where to stand, you know, what to do, which I disagree with. I don't think anybody should be looking for leadership unless it's the kind of leadership that is universal. You know, that's great, but I think within themselves, you know, a lot of leaders out here who think they're not leaders. I mean, if you're a parent and you have a child or a few children, those kids are looking to you to be a leader. You know, those kids are looking to you to be a leader. You don't have to be a leader. You don't have to be nothing extraordinary. Just be a friend or a parent or a guardian or something. Or, you know, I mean, when you go out and you adopt a child, I mean, when they adopt a child, they don't know that they are doing one of the greatest things in the world. You're taking a child who probably was not wanted by their actual parents, and you're taking that child, you're raising that child to give that child a life that child wouldn't have had if you hadn't came along and adopted that particular child. And when you adopt that particular child or children, you become a leader. A leader. I mean, you don't have to, but you got some leaders out here who abuse their power of leadership. You know, you got good leaders, you got bad leaders, you got no leaders. Well, the type of leadership that I'm talking about is the leadership that comes with taking charge of your life, taking charge of your life and making the lives around you better. Okay. All right. Author, once again, author Janet Moore supposedly will be, hopefully, on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Until we have here, the George Wilder Jr. Show, making the world a better place one show at a time. Hopefully. I've done around 500 or 600 of these damn things, and I deleted a lot of them. So if you go on my webpage, Blog Talk Radio webpage, you'll see about 336, 39 maybe. And I've deleted them because I thought they weren't. The reason why I deleted a lot of my shows, a lot of the podcasts, because I thought they just weren't up to par. I thought they weren't professional. I mean, that basically those shows were when I was actually first starting out. So they weren't professional. And I was learning what I was doing. I was learning. And as I was learning, I was screwing up and I did delete it out of the shows. And they were guest filled shows. But anyway, I think we've gotten a little bit better, and I'm always wanting to get even better, hopefully. Who knows? You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. When you begin to think less of what others think about you, that is when you really are able to think. I totally agree with that, and I will be right back. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. It is totally appreciated.
I want to start straight with General Flynn. If General Flynn was lying those times when he said that sanctions did not come up, that he did speak to the Russian ambassador about sanctions before taking office, should the president fire him?
Well, this is a very troubling development, and it speaks to the broader issue of Russia's involvement in our elections. It speaks to the issue of President Trump being buddy-buddy with a thug and a murderer. Who is the head of Russia. And now we're learning that may have been discussions between Flynn and the Russians about sanctions before this administration took power. So this is very, very troubling, and I think the president is going to have to tell us what he's going to do about it.
So far he hasn't said much, Senator. I don't know if you've heard. Here's what he has said. You know, he was asked about this report about Flynn on his flight to Mar-a-Lago late today, right? He just landed about an hour or so ago, and here's how he responded.
I don't know about it. I haven't seen it. What report is that?
I haven't seen it. Reporting that he talked to the ambassador to Russia before you were inaugurated about sanctions, maybe trying to...
I haven't seen that. I'll look at that.
He says he knows nothing about it, hasn't seen any of these reports. Is that a problem?
Well, I don't know. Maybe he was watching CNN fake news. What do you think?
You don't buy it.
That was a joke.
I know it was a joke. I'm saying you don't buy what he said, obviously. We are back. Senator Sanders is back with me, and I want to apologize to our viewers, obviously, for that technical issue. And Senator, you had just been joking about, you know, CNN fake news, but obviously the reports about General
Well, here
Flynn...
is the point. Here okay, is the point, Darren,
yeah.
That it's not a joke. And I can tell you that here in Vermont and all over this country, there is a real concern about what's happening in this country over the last month. when you have a president who attacks people in the media who make critical remarks of him, which is what their job is, as providing fake news, when you have a president who attacks a judge who rules against him as a so-called judge, indicting the entire...
The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air.
All right. Okay. Thank you. Thanks. Thank you so much for that. All right. Ann Coulter, the conservative, I don't know. She runs off at the mouth. She vomits this hate and this, you know, nonsense. But anyway, U.S. Berkeley of California, the university, canceled her speech because, once again, these people out here, I don't, you know what, I've been a fan of Ann Coulter. I've always been a critic. She says some of the dumbest things there is to say. She says she spews her own hatred out here. But free speech is free speech, folks. And the students at this particular school, you might have heard about it. You know, they are always, they threaten her and threaten the school. So the school canceled her speech, so she will not be doing a speech there, and she's really pissed off, and she's calling them thugs, and she may be right. But remember, I've never been a fan of hers, but you know, free speech is what it is. It's in the Constitution. If she if she has something to say, and if you don't agree with it, you just don't agree with it. But, you know, you give a person to a chance to say what they have to say. You don't agree with it, right? And Ann Coulter has never been a friend of mine. I mean, she's all over Fox News. She's Miss Fox News. They always have her on the show and lying her butt off and being hateful. And, you know, Ann Coulter being Ann Coulter. You know, she's got a lot of books out there. She's sold, I don't know how many books she's sold, but she's got quite a bit of writings out there in books. And I've also heard that people aren't buying them. Which is, there was a something going around a few years ago that's saying that most of the conservatives who write books and publish books, actually, nobody actually buys them. The only person who buys some of these conservative books that I've heard in the past were the conservatives themselves. They buy up their own books to make their books a bestseller. They buy them themselves, you know. And I'm thinking that's what she probably done, or I know a lot of people have done that. Conservatives have bought their own book just so they can get it to the number one spot on the New York Times bestsellers list. And I guess there's nothing wrong with that, but, it's a little deceitful, you know. It's a little deceitful. So Ann Coulter has canceled her talk at U.S. Berkeley because of the protest against her. And she's really, really angry about free speech. And I don't blame her. I think she had a right to speak if she was invited. She has a right to speak. But, you know, she says a lot of things that are ridiculous, but, you know, but... everybody has a right to say something. I mean, you got a lot of stupid people out here who say a lot of dumb things and they get away with it. So why not Coulter? Well, anyway, she was scared off. So, you know, they canceled her trip, her visit to the university. All right, let's move right along. I'm looking at a photograph here of Donald Trump. Trump ready to blow up NAFTA. That should read differently, folks. That should read Trump ready to blow up the United States. You know, because these guys, he's threatening North Korea. North Korea is threatening the United States. They have ships going towards each other, and this is just crazy. I don't think North Korea, the United States would obliterate North Korea. It's just a small country, but North Korea, they do have nukes that probably could reach Hawaii. So this is just awful. And Trump and his clowns are saying that it's not their fault. But you know what? If Trump had not been elected, we would not be here on the edge of World War III. That's a fact. We would not be here fearing that we in the United States are going to get a nuclear bomb dropped on us because of Trump's ineptness and his minions and goons. And the people in Congress are aiding and abetting this guy. Trump probably should have been impeached a long time ago. But the Republicans in Congress, they want him there because they feel that this guy is going to get through their agenda. And their agenda is probably starting a war, another war, World War III, and building a damn wall and cutting off. Cutting Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare, whatever you want to think, social programs that people depend on. Because, folks, Trump doesn't give a damn about the people. He wants what he wants. He's doing a tax cut now, claims that it's going to help businesses, individuals, and all this kind of thing. Congress. I bet Trump wish he could bypass Congress. He could bypass Congress because he's bypassing the American people, but he can't bypass Congress, at least not the Democrats. The Republicans are probably going to give him everything he wants because it's what they want. And as for impeaching Trump, that's not going to happen because even if and people are still wanting his taxes and he's still refusing. And I don't think he's ever going to give up his taxes, you know, but because they're his taxes. The IRS knows what's in them. Somebody's going to leak them. He might as well give them up because someone somewhere is going to leak his taxes. Someone somewhere. I thought a few weeks ago when Rachel Maddow, it was all over the news that she had his taxes. She had his taxes. She did not have his taxes. And well, put it this way. She had his 2005 taxes. We're looking for his 2016 taxes or 2015 taxes. So that was much to do about nothing, Rachel. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. See what else is here. A movie director passed away, Jonathan Demme. One of his most famous movies were Silence of the Lamb. So he passed away. Tax plan, they're talking about Trump's trillions of gifts for the rich. Of course. Of course. That's what his plan is all about. The rich. The rich. That's what it's all about. You know, this may be the most dangerous thing Donald Trump believes. Obamacare approval is up, but GOP still wants to repeal it. I think they're going to have a real, real problem at repealing Obamacare because so many people love it. Even the people who voted for Trump, the Trump supporters love it. And do you think that the Trump supporters are not going to let their representatives know that they want this? They don't want to repeal this? Yeah, but the Republicans in Congress, they don't give a damn. They just know it's Obama. Obama had something to do with it, and they want to get rid of it. And that's going to be hard. If the approval rating is up for Obamacare, they're going to have a hard time of repealing it. They may be back. This is the second try they're going to try and repeal it. The first try they failed. Now they're going to try it again because Obamacare is in the hands of the Republicans. And every time they fail to repeal it, they're going to try to bring it up again to repeal it again. And I think the votes are going to be there because a lot of the representatives in Congress, their constituency is saying, hey, do not repeal Obamacare. We are using it. It's beneficial to us. We don't want it repealed. Keep it. Make it better. Then you have those on the far right are saying, repeal it. To hell with them. Let the people die. We don't want it. But the approval rating is up. So I think the Republicans in Congress are going to have even this slimy ass Paul Ryan. Even he said that we don't have the votes. And you will not have the votes because you're taking away health care from people who have it and replacing it with nothing. Nothing. Trump is all about the rich people. You know, he don't give a damn if you have a doctor or not. He don't give a damn if you going to a doctor or not. It's what he wants. Obviously, the wall spending bill, I know that pisses Trump off, because if the wall had remained in the spending bill, then there would have possibly been a government shutdown. And that would have been bad for Trump. But Obamacare is up. It is up. But they still want to repeal it, which just doesn't make any sense. They just want to repeal it because they want to repeal it. They don't give a damn how many people are actually positively benefiting from it. They don't give a damn. You know, it's all about rich. And the thing about Trump, he is still profiting from his businesses. And the Constitution says you must divest. But hey, wow, it's not happening. If that was a Democrat in the Oval Office and he was still doing business, he would have been impeached by now. You know, but these guys are these Republicans are letting Trump get away with maneuvering on the Constitution. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. We're talking about Donald Trump. We're talking about Obamacare. The approval is up for it. I know there's a lot of people out there who hate it, and they have their millions of reasons for hating it. You know, but if you were one of those people who needed health care and you didn't have it, you'd probably say it's a good deal. It's a good thing. All right, they're still talking about Fox News anchor saying employees of color are not treated in fair and in a balanced way. They're talking about Fox News. So Fox News lately has been all in the news. They've got so many problems there. Network veteran Kelly Wright joins a dozen current and former employees suing over allegations of racial bias. I guess it's some sort of plantation there. That's the way it is in some workplaces. I mean, in some workplaces around the United States, I mean, it's like a concentration camp. The supervisors and the managers treating the employees like they're the lowest scum on the earth. And the employees have to take the abuse because they need the money and they have to pay rent and take care of their families, pay their house note, car note. So, but I've worked in a few of these tenuous employment workplaces. So I know I'm speaking from firsthand. It's a mess in some of these workplaces around the United States and other places. I mean, you feel like you're on a slave plantations. In some cases, you got a lot of supervisors who abuse their little power that they may have over an employee. That's given. You know, then you got managers who are assholes, you know, because they're managers. And I've always said, if you treat an employee with respect and dignity, you'll get more out of them. But if you treat an employee like they're the lowest thing on earth and they better get their ass in gear, that employee is going to resent you and may even resign and take his skills and all of his work ethics to somewhere else. But, you know, you got these places that treat employees like S-H-I-T. And that's wrong. And I'm hearing that Fox News is one of them. You know, right now, I'm just not seeing it here. And, you know, it's just wrong. It is totally, totally wrong. It's just wrong for people to step on people, especially when people are down. It seems like the lower you are, the harder they're going to kick. And this is the world we're in, folks. And that's why we're here, to make it a better place. Try to make it a better place. And we will make it a better place. And we're going to need you to help us do just that.
What keeps us healthy and happy as we go through life? If you were going to invest now in your future best self, where would you put your time and your energy? There was a recent survey of millennials asking them what their most important life goals were. And over 80% said that a major life goal for them was to get rich. And another 50% of those same young adults said that another major life goal was to become famous. And we're constantly told to lean into work, to push harder and achieve more. We're given the impression that these are the things that we need to go after in order to have a good life. Pictures of entire lives, of the choices that people make and how those choices work out for them, those pictures are almost impossible to get. Most of what we know about human life, we know from asking people to remember the past. And as we know, hindsight is anything but 20/20. We forget vast amounts of what happens to us in life, and sometimes memory is downright creative. But what if we could watch entire lives as they unfold through time? What if we could study people from the time that they were teenagers all the way into old age to see what really keeps people happy and healthy? We did that. The Harvard study of adult development may be the longest study of adult life that's ever been done. For 75 years, we've tracked the lives of 724 men. Year after year, asking about their work, their home lives, their health, and of course, asking all along the way without knowing how their life stories were going to turn out. Studies like this are exceedingly rare. Almost all projects of this kind fall apart within a decade because too many people drop out of the study, or funding for the research dries up, or the researchers get distracted, or they die, and nobody moves the ball further down the field. But through a combination of luck and the persistence of several generations of researchers, this study has survived. About 60 of our original 724 men are still alive, still participating in the study, most of them in their 90s. And we are now beginning to study the more than 2,000 children of these men. And I'm the fourth director of the study. Since 1938, we've tracked the lives of two groups of men. The first group started in the study when they were sophomores at Harvard College. They all finished college during World War II, and then most went off to serve in the war. And the second group that we've followed was a group of boys from Boston's poorest neighborhoods. Boys who were chosen for the study specifically because they were from some of the most troubled and disadvantaged families in the Boston of the 1930s. Most lived in tenements, many without hot and cold running water. When they entered the study, all of these teenagers were interviewed, they were given medical exams. We went to their homes and we interviewed their parents. And then these teenagers grew up into adults who entered all walks of life. They became factory workers and lawyers and bricklayers and doctors, one president of the United States. Some developed alcoholism. A few developed schizophrenia. Some climbed the social ladder from the bottom all the way to the very top. And some made that journey in the opposite direction. The founders of this study would never in their wildest dreams have imagined that I would be standing here today, 75 years later, telling you that the study still continues. Every 2 years, our patient and dedicated research staff calls up our men and asks them if we can send them yet one more set of questions about their lives. Many of the inner city Boston men ask us, why do you keep wanting to study me? My life just isn't that interesting. The Harvard men never ask that question. To get the clearest picture of these lives, we don't just send them questionnaires. We interview them in their living rooms. We get their medical records from their doctors. We draw their blood. We scan their brains. We talk to their children. We videotape them talking with their wives about their deepest concerns. And when about a decade ago we finally asked the wives if they would join us as members of the study, many of the women said, you know, it's about time. So what have we learned? What are the lessons that come from the tens of thousands of pages of information that we've generated on these lives? Well, the lessons aren't about wealth or fame or working harder and harder. The clearest message that we get from this 75-year study is this: good relationships keep us happier and healthier, period. We've learned three big lessons about relationships. The first is that social connections are really good for us and that loneliness kills. It turns out that people who are more socially connected to family, to friends, to community, are happier, they're physically healthier, and they live longer than people who are less well connected. And the experience of loneliness turns out to be toxic. People who are more isolated than they want to be from others find that they are less happy, their health declines earlier in midlife, their brain functioning declines sooner, and they live shorter lives than people who are not lonely. And the sad fact is that at any given time, more than 1 in 5 Americans will report that they're lonely. And we know that you can be lonely in a crowd and you can be lonely in a marriage. So the second big lesson that we learned is that it's not just the number of friends you have, and it's not whether or not you're in a committed relationship, but it's the quality of your close relationships that matters. It turns out that living in the midst of conflict is really bad for our health. High conflict marriages, for example, without much affection, turn out to be very bad for our health, perhaps worse than getting divorced. And living in the midst of good, warm relationships is protective. Once we had followed our men all the way into their 80s, we wanted to look back at them at midlife and to see if we could predict who was going to grow into a happy, healthy octogenarian and who wasn't. And when we gathered together everything we knew about them at age 50, it wasn't their middle-aged cholesterol levels that predicted how they were going to grow old. It was how satisfied they were in their relationships. The people who were the most satisfied in their relationships at age 50 were the healthiest at age 80. And good, close relationships seem to buffer us from some of the slings and arrows of getting old. Our most happily partnered men and women reported in their 80s that on the days when they had more physical pain, their moods stayed just as happy. But the people who were in unhappy relationships, on the days when they reported more physical pain, it was magnified by more emotional pain. And the third big lesson that we learn about relationships and our health is that good relationships don't just protect our bodies, they protect our brains. It turns out that being in a securely attached relationship to another person in your 80s is protective, that the people who are in relationships where they really feel they can count on the other person in times of need, those people's memories stay sharper longer. And the people in relationships where they feel they really can't count on the other one, those are the people who experience earlier memory decline. And those good relationships, they don't have to be smooth all the time. Some of our octogenarian couples could bicker with each other day in and day out. But as long as they felt that they could really count on the other when the going got tough, those arguments didn't take a toll on their memories. So this message that good, close relationships are good for our health and well-being, this is wisdom that's as old as the hills. Why is this so hard to get and so easy to ignore? Well, we're human. What we'd really like is a quick fix, something we can get that'll make our lives good and keep them that way. Relationships are messy and they're complicated, and the hard work of tending to family and friends, that's not sexy or glamorous. It's also lifelong. It never ends. The people in our 75-year study who were the happiest in retirement were the people who had actively worked to replace workmates with new playmates. Just like the millennials in that recent survey, many of our men, when they were starting out as young adults, really believed that fame and wealth and high achievement were what they needed to go after to have a good life. But over and over, over these 75 years, our study has shown that the people who fared the best were the people who leaned into relationships with family, with friends, with community. So what about you? Let's say you're 25, or you're 40, or you're 60. What might leaning into relationships even look like?
Oh, my God.
Well, the possibilities are practically endless. It might be something as simple as replacing screen time with people time, or livening up a stale relationship by doing something new together, long walks or date nights, or reaching out to that family member who you haven't spoken to in years, because those all too common family feuds take a terrible toll on the people who hold the grudges. I'd like to close with a quote from Mark Twain. More than a century ago, he was looking back on his life, and he wrote this. There isn't time. So brief is life for bickerings, apologies, heartburnings, callings to account. There is only time for loving, and but an instant, so to speak, for that. The good life is built with good relationships. Thank you.
Thank you for being on the show. All righty. Welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Thanks for that. Thanks for that clip. All right. Trump's White House looks a lot like the most corrupt nations in the world. My God. Trump's White House looks like, I'm reading this because I had to, you know, say something about this because I've been saying this forever. I've been saying it forever that his White House is the most corrupt ever. He's loaded with questionable people around him. Nothing but questionable people around him. He's giving these people jobs in the administration, especially in his cabinet. All right. Presidential advisor Ivanka and husband Jared Kushner are still connected to their own businesses. I've said this earlier. These people are in the White House and they're still making money from their businesses counter the Constitution of the United States. And the Republicans in Congress, the representatives and the senators are letting this guy get away with this. Democrats can only talk about it because they have no power. They can only, you know, mouth it and bring it up every now and then. But it's wrong. It's not supposed to happen. He's supposed to divest of all his earnings in his business, but he's not. Just like he's not showing his taxes. He's vehement on not showing his taxes. There's no way you're going to make Trump show his taxes. The people around him are saying he ain't going to show them taxes, but a majority of American people want to see his taxes. So the Trump administration is thumbing their nose up at every one of us out here who wants to see his taxes. The majority of Americans in this country wants to see his taxes, but he and his minions are giving us the finger. That's what they're doing. They're giving us the damn finger. Even the people who put his ass in office, he's giving them the finger. And he really is. Trump is saying, I don't give a damn what you think. I don't give a damn what you want. It ain't gonna happen. I'm president and you're not. Deal with it. And that's how it is with the Trump administration. That's how it is with this, with the Trump administration, and that's how it will be. All right, for decades, the United States, what is this? All right, for decades, the United States has worked with other countries to eliminate nepotism. There is a good nepotism, okay? Of course, he's got his relatives in the White House working for him. And that shouldn't be. He's giving his relatives jobs. He's going to give his grandson Barron. What is his name? Barron. I mean, there's a good reason for that. Nepotism breeds corruption. You've seen countries all over the world where they appoint family members, whether it's their son, their daughter-in-laws. It provides for tremendous opportunities for corruption. But Trump doesn't give a damn. People who want to curry favor find way to provide favors to family members as a way to get closer to the person in power. Trump doesn't give a care about nepotism. He's going to hire, he's going to do what the hell he wants to do in the White House. And I agree. I think that this is the most corrupt administration in the history of America. And the Republicans are doing nothing about it because they are a part of it. They are a part of the corruption. That's why they let it linger, let it go on, and let this man just make a mockery, a sham of the United States and the White House. They forget somehow that the White House belongs to the American people. And that Donald Trump and whoever becomes president, they're only occupying it for a little while. Anyway, President Trump, who has entrusted more power to his family members than any recent president, puts the agenda at risk. "I like nepotism," Trump told Larry King in 2006, the year he replaced his Apprentice co-star, company executive Carolyn Kushner, and his daughter Ivanka Trump. Whether it's nepotism or just plain old goonism, it's an awful White House. This is a White House. They are making, I've said this before on the show, these people in the White House are making a mockery of the Oval Office. It's corruption all over the place. It's been corruption since day one of Trump, and nothing's done because the Republicans in Congress are aiding and abetting him. They need to all go. Not just Donald Trump, but everybody around him, everybody he's appointed, his friends, his family, you know, all these people, you know. And I think some of his supporters are starting to see that Donald Trump doesn't give a damn about them either, because he's willing to hurt them just like he's willing to hurt those who did not vote for him. This man doesn't care about nothing. And I've said this before, we've got the good fellas in the White House. We got a bunch of gangsters, goons, thugs running the country. This is why I know, and a lot of other people know, that we are getting ready for World War III, because these guys want a war. They don't want to talk. They don't want diplomacy. They'll say they do, but we all know that Republicans want war. They want probably a return of the draft. We all know that. And I totally agree. The White House looks a lot like the most corrupt, one of the nations in the world, because of the family affair. Not just because of the family affair, because of everything. You look at the cabinet that Trump has appointed. A lot of these people don't know their asses from a hole in the ground, and they're running these vital programs. Well, Trump don't know his ass from a hole in the ground. He's running America. At least he thinks he's a leader. But there's a lot of people who are resisting to Trump. But he doesn't give a damn. Trump doesn't care. He just wants what he wants, and he's going to try to get it. And he's going to get it because he's got these Republicans in his back pocket. But you have to understand one thing. For every Republican governor and for every Republican senator in Congress, they have people back home don't like what's going on in Washington. They don't want their Obamacare repealed. They want it made better. They don't want tax cuts for the rich. They don't want that. But the Republicans, they're going to throw that crap down our throat. They, a majority of the people in the United States, they don't want a wall, but they're going to, you know, well, it was a campaign promise. Just because it's a campaign promise, how many times have a president made campaign promises and never kept any of them, or either part of it or half? You know, just because it's a campaign promise to build a wall, I don't think a wall will ever be built. I just think it's just something that Trump is just dancing around. And because, remember, a few months ago, he was saying Mexico was going to build a wall, and Mexico told him to go straight to hell. He was so emphatically stating that Mexico was going to build a wall. And I knew better. I knew better than that. That was a dumb statement. Now, America, if there is a wall, and which I doubt there will be, because Congress has to, people have to have something to say. I doubt it. But if there is a wall, that means that a lot of other vital programs that is needed to make America run will be cut, because they're going to cut those programs and put that money towards building a damn wall. So in order for Trump to build a wall, he's going to make America a whole lot less great again, because he's taking away the foundation that has made him great, has made America great. And when I think about what I just said, and Trump on the campaign trail saying, let's make America great again. That's all. I mean, he had it all on his hat. It was a slogan. It was all over the place. But you hardly hear that now. You don't hear making America great again coming out of his foul mouth. You just don't hear it. It's not there, because he knows he's not making it great again. He couldn't make it great. He can, only thing he can do is destroy it, and that's what he's doing. Even his surrogates, his stooges, his clowns, his flunkies, they're not even saying it. Because he's not making America great. America was great when he was running for office. But now that he's in office, America has gone down the tube. We've lost a lot of our standing in the world because of this clown who wants to grab pussies. I mean, this guy is just such a sexual assaulter. It ain't funny. They impeached Bill Clinton because of his indiscretions with Monica Lewinsky. Bill Clinton and his discretions have nothing on the crap that Donald Trump has produced over his lifetime. And this guy is still in office. The only reason why he's still in office is because the Democrats are not in control and they can't do anything. They can't impeach him. They can talk about it, you know, but the Republicans aren't going to listen. They're going to spin it some sort of way, you know. But, I do think that America is the most corrupt in its history. The White House. We got thugs. We got goons. We got people in there. We got people in the White House who don't have college educations. Don't have no education. Trump trying to sound presidential, and he sounds like a three-year-old kid when he's trying to talk about tax reform, when he's trying to talk about Obamacare, when he's trying to talk about anything that's American. He doesn't sound presidential. He doesn't look presidential. But in the back of his mind, that's not Trump. Trump is that. I mean, if you hearing Trump sounding soft and mild when he's trying to talk to America, that's not Trump. Trump is, somebody is trying to groom Trump into being presidential. I mean, he's got maybe a lot of people around him. His handlers are feeding him the Constitution because he doesn't know. If it seems like he's trying to, if it seems like he knows something, that's because somebody somewhere around him fed it to him. And if it seems like he knows big words, somebody's probably saying, hey, wow, somebody wrote a speech and he's probably reading it. Yeah, Trump has a lot of handlers around him and they're teaching him everything. I mean, they're teaching him about the White House. He's learning on the job. But one thing for sure, we are going to get in a war. I mean, the Republicans, I mean, they act like they don't want it, but they keep, you know, the provocation, if I can say, excuse me, folks. It looks like it's going to happen. You know, I don't want it to happen. I'm not egging it on to happen, you know, but the first day that Trump set foot into the White House, it was all, we all thought, whoa, we're going to get in a war now. It's going to be World War III, and it's cooking. It is totally cooking. It's sad. It's true. And I don't know what to say about it, is that we got to try to find some way to get this guy out because he's destroying America. And Republicans are aiding and abetting and standing by and letting him do this. Any other president at any other time, he's worse than Nixon. This is worse than Nixon. Watergate. And he's still in office. That's because of Republicans. They want to keep him there because they know he's a clown. But I mean, literally a clown. But they want to keep him there so they can use him in getting what they want across. Then after they get what he wants, after Trump gives them what they want, you know, once Trump, something comes out impeachable on Trump, they're going to impeach him and put Mike Pence in his place. But in all, they still have what Trump has gave them, you know. So it's dicey, and it is the most corrupt. I think not only is the White House the most corrupt, I think Congress is also. I think Congress is corrupt. The Republicans in Congress, the representatives and the senators, I totally believe that they are just as corrupt as Trump. So we got a cook. We have a corrupt federal government. And that's no lie. It is totally, totally corrupt with this guy. But, you know, we can only pray and our way out of this because it seems to be getting worse.
I'm Keith Olbermann, and this is The Resistance. We have elected an idiot. For all the insanity and the stunning self-absorption and the bullying and the delusional view of America that would embarrass a high school dropout watching cartoons while strung out on meth, the much more existential threat from the Swiss cheese personality of Donald John Trump roared to the forefront over this weekend past. And that existential threat is simply this. In the complex international relations that, like it or not, keep the world from blowing itself up every afternoon, Trump has just proved he has no earthly clue what the fuck he is doing. Just since last Friday, Donald Trump has given aid and comfort to our Russian enemies who are aiming for nothing short of world prominence with the help of their jackass Trump. He has undermined this nation's status as the only enforcer left on the side of human rights, and he has screwed up, whether inadvertently or as reported Sunday night deliberately, nearly four decades of diplomacy, balanced on a razor's edge with China and Taiwan. And just as that China and Taiwan diplomacy began to stabilize, he went and screwed it up again on Twitter. Good work, moron. You don't have to live next door to the United Nations to understand why talking to the president of Taiwan and making it public and referring to the close economic, political, and security ties between Taiwan and the United States just increase the chances that Trump will get some of us, including his supporters, killed. Since 1979, we have played a silly little childish game with mainland China. If we don't make a big deal about that island of Taiwan, if we don't call it a nation, if we recognize that psychologically Taiwan is to the Chinese what communist Cuba has been to us since 1959, if our diplomats and presidents and dipshits elect like Donald Trump don't rub China's nose in it, the Chinese will not wipe the more or less democracy of Taiwan off the freaking map. It's that simple. The 1,350,000,000 mainland Chinese communists will not turn the 23.5 million Chinese on Taiwan into a parking lot. All we have to do is not do exactly what Donald Nitwit Trump did by saying what he did to the Taiwanese president last Friday. But of course, he did it because he thinks he knows better than everybody else about the world when he doesn't know shit. And anyway, what's the fate of 23.5 million Chinese on Taiwan compared to what really matters? The president of Taiwan called me today to wish me congratulations on winning the presidency. Thank you. Interesting how the U.S. sells Taiwan billions of dollars of military equipment, but I should not accept a congratulatory call. Because clearly the point of an incoming presidential administration is to see how many leaders around the world call in to tell him how terrific he is. We now see, 6 weeks out from the inauguration, the outlines of the Trump doctrine. Congratulate Trump! Sunday, a crowded elevator's worth of trumpets pushed a story in the Washington Post that this was all planned. It was a more robust defense of Taiwan, which is, of course, even dumber, especially if the idiot-elect has to publicly disguise his planned robustness as naivete, because, of course, he then gets mad when people call him naive, and so thus he doubles down on the whole thing Sunday night on Twitter. So now not only are the Chinese pissed off, not only is their help in whatever looms next for us in North Korea in jeopardy, and not only is an actual slow growth in the reliability of the relationship between our two countries at risk, but who benefits from uncertainty between the U.S. and China? We don't win from it. The Chinese don't win from it. In whose interest is the new confusion, the new setback, the new ass-hattery from Trump? Russia. Always Russia. Russia. And by the way, guess what flooded out of a WikiLeaks dump Saturday that you probably didn't hear about? 90 gigabytes, 2,420 documents of intelligence related to Germany and the German president Angela Merkel, ahead of Germany's upcoming elections. Germany, which since Trump's election by a minority of our voters has already taken our place as the leading democracy in the world and the only Western power able or willing to stand up against the passive-aggressive world war that Russia has been waging for several years, now with the aid and comfort of President-elect Donald bumbling amateur Putin puppet fucking Trump. And yes, I said Trump's election has already resulted in Germany taking our place as the leading democracy, the leading enforcer on the side of human rights in the world. And if these fiascos with China and Taiwan and WikiLeaks in Germany are not evidence enough, there was a third Trump diplomatic disaster that might actually have eclipsed the other two. Philippines President Rodrigo Duterte, the street thug who has had thousands of his citizens murdered by police and vigilantes without trial, or in many cases without even arrest, on the pretext of an anti-drug campaign. Duterte says he too got on the phone with Trump on Friday, and that Trump endorsed the barbarism Duterte has unleashed. I could sense a good rapport, an animated president-elect Trump, and he was wishing me success in my campaign against the drug problem, Duterte said. He understood the way we are handling it. We are many things in this country, but we have never and must never stoop to murder disguised as law and order by a dictator who has compared his own actions to those of Adolf Hitler as if he were complimenting himself. Worst yet, Duterte said this buffoon Trump has invited him to visit New York and Washington, and bluntly, Rodrigo Duterte should not be admitted to this country even in a casket. But don't tell Trump that. He knows everything. If this is how this dense, pea-brained little man is going to run things, if this is how far in over his own fat orange head he's going to be internationally, if this is how he is going to strut as president, a triple-chinned bull in a nuclear China shop, he cannot be allowed to become president. Because after January 20th, if he decides to have a week of prioritizing receiving congratulations for his inaugural and tweeting out his petulance about Chinese taxes, if he can't manage to keep his fucking ego out of these opaque but essential balancing acts, the ones which stitch together the world as it is, he could get us all killed before his next appointment with whoever or whatever colors his goddamned hair. Resist. Peace.
All right. Thank you, Keith. That's Keith Olbermann. He's always in Trump's ass. But yeah, he's right. He's right. All right. When you think less of what others think about you, that is when you really will be able to think, if I wrote that right. Okay. All right. All right. Be nice to one another out there. It doesn't take a lot to be nice to people, you know, be nice to one another. People, so many people are just mean. Well, we talked about healthcare, repealing healthcare. We talked about North Korea, but we didn't talk about the senators visiting the White House today. They probably all agreed that we're going to be bombed. Well, repealing healthcare. Tax cut businesses. You know, Trump's tax cuts, you know who they are actually going to benefit? His tax cuts are going to benefit Trump himself. Isn't that something? The tax cuts are going to benefit him. He's cutting because, you know, that's Trump. It's going to benefit him more than anybody else. And it just proves it. That these tax cuts are for the rich. For the rich. I mean, when he was running for office, I believe he said he was going to raise taxes on the rich. But now he's going to cut taxes and screw everybody else. You see what I'm saying? You see what I'm saying when I just got through saying? Most of these presidents, they don't keep their promises. They flip. They go this way and that way. They'll say anything to get elected. Anything to get elected. They will say they're going to do this and do that. And once they're elected, they flip. And I think there should be some sort of criteria in the Constitution that says when a president candidate, once he gets elected and gets into office, if he breaks any of his promises, if he flips on any of his promises that he told the American people, who voted for him because of the things he said, he should be thrown out immediately. Immediately, not 4 years from now or 8 years. He should be thrown out immediately. The minute you find one of these cocksuckers lying, they should be kicked out. Somebody should amend the Constitution to say that. You tell one lie, you break one promise that you told, that you said to get elected. If you tell a lie, you break a promise, your ass is out. You're grass. Because too many politicians say the right things. They say the right things to get elected. But once they're in office, they change their mind on what they told you for your vote. And too many of them lie like that. And that's been going on for years and years and years and years. They will say anything to get elected. I'm going to do this for you. We're going to do that for you. You know, you're going to do this. We're going to do that. Once in office, they flip. They lie. They break their promises. And you're left feeling helpless because you elected him on the things that he said he would do for you and the country. That's why I say we have to vet these people. You just can't vote for somebody because they look nice or they have a nice sounding name or they sound good. That those are the wrong criteria to try to judge somebody who is going to be, you know, financially running your life, basically. And that's what we have in the White House. That's what we have in the White House. We have these people getting in front of our televisions, telling us, ordering us dictating to us what's going to happen, as if we don't mean nothing. If we we're worthless. We're the paupers, you know, and they're the kings and queens and emperors, and we're the peasants, you know. So this is what this White House reminds me of. We're the peasants. Donald Trump is the emperor and the king, and everybody around him, you know, we are the peasants, the paupers, the poor, you know. We work for a living. I mean, we do things for a living. We create, we do this, do that. But they're in the White House. That's their castle, the king's castle. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, and it's been fun, folks. We're just about off the air. I had a great time today, and we're going to have a great guest tomorrow. Tune in for that. We're going to talk about a lot of interesting things, because that's where it's at. Thanks for tuning in to the George Wilder Jr. Show, everybody. And you have a great day. Bye-bye. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Heaven help the child who never had a home. Heaven help the girl who walks the streets alone. Heaven help the roses if the bombs begin to fall. Heaven never saw. Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who has a crawl. Heaven help us all.
We're not off the air yet, but we will be in a few seconds, folks. I want to say once again, thanks for tuning into the George Wilder Jr. Show. As always, you're marvelous. And make sure you get this number down, 347-857-1762. We're off. Bye-bye. Okay. We're off. All right. Bye-bye. Okay.